Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the reality is, in all of this, what are we going to do? And will the Democrats be able to stand forward and fight back against the messaging that we know that's coming? It's all everybody else's fault. It's China. It's the Democrats' fault. It's, you know, it's... It's the hospitals. It's the sick people's fault. It's the WHO. It's, you know, it's CNN. It's the mainstream media. It's everyone but Donald Trump. And the Democrats don't seem to really know how to ball up their little digits and throw a good punch. And, you know, I saw this tweet that grabbed my attention that pointed out in 2011, the idea of trading Social Security, Medicare, trading sequester to save those things was palatable because, hey, the Republicans had the House and 47 seats in the Senate. And today, those same people are saying, well, you know, Nancy Pelosi doesn't quite have the leverage to move forward on something big and bold, something like the HERO Act or better, because the Democrats only control the House and 47 Senate seats. Which seems kind of bizarre, but the logic is insane. Whereas Republicans, they're willing to throw punches and really willing to obstruct and willing to hold the country hostage to get their pound of flesh. And here to share some thoughts on, can Democrats rise to this occasion? Can they possibly ball up their little digits and get in there and throw a good punch? That's why I've asked Jeff Hauser to come talk with us. Jeff is the executive director of the Revolving Door Project. Jeff, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, anytime, Rick.
So, you know, I'm looking at this comparison that you put out of 2011 and 2020, and I'm going, you know, you got the establishment Democrats who are saying, well, you know, we can't do too much because, well, we don't quite have the power. But, you know, they seem to always negotiate with themselves.
Yeah, and I want Democrats to have the courage of their convictions, and I also want them to project confidence. And, you know, honestly, even if they didn't have the courage of their convictions, even if they thought they were going to, you know, fail in the end, you don't signal in advance that you're going to fail. Nancy Pelosi has described her bill as a messaging bill. Every member of the House leadership communication staff has signaled to every reporter in Washington, D.C., oh, we know this is just like a messaging bill. We know McConnell isn't going to move forward on this. And, you know, one way to guarantee that Mitch McConnell doesn't act on your bill is to admit that it's implausible.
Right.
One way to make your messaging bill an ineffective message is to render it dull and irrelevant by describing it as a messaging bill. Every single person who works for the Democratic Party, who works for Nancy Pelosi or for, you know, Minority Leader Schumer or what have you, who describes this bill as a messaging bill ought to be fired. It's a very simple, basic rule that you're not establishing a negotiating position if you make fun of your own position.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing that gets me, Jeff, you know, because I've said the same thing. What I've been saying is, look, you push your bill through and then you fight like hell to move it. And anybody who stands in your way, you run them over. This, again, goes back to the things I've been saying for years about the Democrats. And that's, you know, they don't want to get into a fight. In fact, so much so that they won't even offer to hold your coat while you're in the fight.
Yes, Democrats think they're going to get points for being reasonable, for being realistic, and for being consistent. And they're not actually even being consistent. They're not being reasonable, because what's reasonable is to acknowledge how much pain is there in this country and that the needs are just incredible. And there should be no trimming of our sails now. And what's been encouraging is the extent to which Vice President Biden seems to be recognizing that this is a moment to go big. And he is changing. He managed to win a primary as a centrist moderate, and he is shifting bigger and bolder in the general election. And why? Is it because he has changed, or has the world changed? I would argue that the world has changed.
Absolutely.
And that Biden has his eyes open to it, and Pelosi does not at the moment.
No, this is the moment. This is the moment that you have to be big and bold. In fact, you know, I've had this conversation with a couple of conservatives over the last couple of days. You know, I've been talking about Andrew Yang's rise to prominence with the freedom dividend and the universal basic income. And I said, look, this isn't a liberal, hippie liberal idea. This was Milton Friedman's idea from the 60s. This was a very simple idea that you give consumers money, they spend it, and businesses profit. It was a very conservative idea. So why aren't liberals and conservatives together on this? And no sooner do I say that, than I see the American Conservative Group has come out with a call for the exact same thing. So to me, this is one of those moments where if Democrats were really, really visionary and really thinking for the future, this is an opportunity to maybe pull some of those conservatives in their direction by talking about what they already want.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the bill, the CARES Act, the phase three, the largest bill that's been passed heretofore, it's had some admirable intentions, but was incredibly ill-constructed. It was very complicated, and it's basically giving loans to small businesses, and then if the small businesses meet certain criteria, the loans will be forgiven, and it's like super clunky. And then you have an idea like a freedom dividend, or however you want to phrase it, but the government giving money to people. Rashida Tlaib even had a version where the Federal Reserve was involved. We potentially started looking at issues like postal banking and other ways to get money for people who don't have checking accounts, because there are millions of Americans who don't have checking accounts. But the idea of just the government giving people money so that they can get necessities, that is much simpler, and it's going to be much more effective than the indirect, we're going to give a loan, you fill out some paperwork, paperwork may or may not get uploaded, we may have a small business administration that has been, you know, its funding has gone down year after year after year, it has no capabilities to help small businesses. The Democrats should get out of the business of being complicated, and they should be much more simple in their policy design, and giving money to people is one of those simple ideas that can actually help people.
No, I had the former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh on the program. Somebody that probably, if you put us on the spectrum of policy, we would be at complete polar opposite ends, except on this issue where he said if he were in Congress still, he would be pushing for the government to pay between 90 and 100% of your lost wages. If the government is telling you you have to stay home to protect yourself, they should be paying you. And this is a very simple message. Stay home. We'll pay you. Stay home, protect you and your family. We will cover your costs. It is that important. We are in that moment in history. Stay the hell home. It's not that difficult.
Right. I mean, if you look at Europe, Boris Johnson is a right-wing leader in the United Kingdom. He's pretty horrible. He's very Trumpy. He and Trump are pals. Even he agrees with the notion of making sure people get I believe in the United Kingdom, it's 80% of their salaries. Very lefty Denmark has that program in place. Germany, which, you know, their leading ruling coalition sort of in the middle, they're doing it. Much of the rest of the world is doing some version of that sort of income replacement. So either get it through your, have the government just say, we are going to give all employers, we're going to pay this amount, no filing fees, no applications through banks, or just give money directly to Americans. Either way, those are more simple than what's going on, not much more expensive. And honestly, the money doesn't really matter. It's very weird for people to think about. The government is just different than you or I. They don't have finite capacity. They have the ability to print more money. That doesn't work if you have inflation. But America does not have inflation. In fact, right now we have deflation. Prices are tending to go down because, of course, there's a lot less demand. That makes sense. But in that condition, American government could issue money and then just have the Federal Reserve cover it. There's no limit to what we can be doing and what we should be doing, because we want to make it as easy as possible for people to stay home.
Right. And this is why I said from the very beginning, even before the first stimulus bill was passed or anything was passed, they were still in the discussion phase. I wanted to see Democrats go big and bold. This is an opportunity to completely change our economy and completely change the two America divides that we see, where you have the rich and the poor. This is an opportunity to possibly redo mortgages, a possibility to undo people with student loan debt or massive credit card debt. There's an opportunity to really rechange and reframe this country and benefit the working class for once.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, what's going on right now is that the least incompetent part of the current administration, the least Trump part of the federal government, is the Federal Reserve. And so the Federal Reserve is having, from a technocratic perspective, the most competent response to this economic turmoil. And the problem is that the Federal Reserve, by its design, is much better at helping rich people stay rich than helping the rest of us. Now, helping rich people stay rich has some modest trickle-down effects now, but overall, what the Fed, by the virtue of the fact that the Federal Reserve is doing its job well and our legislative response is not enough, we are making economic inequality, which was obviously catastrophically bad before, even worse now. And so it's just a real problem. And in fact, like the chairman of the Federal Reserve has told Congress, like, I need you guys to help middle class people and working class people and poor people. You need to be doing much more. I can't do it. But unfortunately, the Federal Reserve, the system he represents, is the least incompetent part of the federal government right now.
Yeah, that's scary. But here's the thing. I mean, I'm hearing people like Mark Cuban talking about, you know, moving to a trickle-up economic system, which is basically what I've been saying. There shouldn't have been a dime going to corporate America. The $500 billion slush fund for corporate America should have been a giant way to boost the bottom of the economy, make sure that people can stay home. Because here's the thing, and this is just common sense. You give all of the working people the ability to stay home and continue their income and to continue to consume the things that they need, and employers will figure out how to get the profit out of them. You don't need to hand them profit. This just seems like, it seems ridiculous that we keep doing this every time something happens with the economy, that we write these big checks to people who don't need it.
Yeah, I mean, we have a system that where rich people have decided that over the years, they do not believe in government. And so for so many decades, the institutions of the federal government, which were built up under Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New Deal, and remained relatively strong into the 70s, there's been a sustained war on the federal government for the last 45 to 50 years. And you see that in something like the Center for Disease Control, which used to be the preeminent anti-disease institution in the entire world. And the United States did not have testing kits that worked. The World Health Organization, which Trump disparages, had kits that worked. We were offered them, we turned them down, and instead we had 6 weeks of no testing in the United States because of Donald Trump's xenophobia and because of the CDC's incompetence. It is insane that you would be a country that could be the worldwide leader in fighting against disease, and you can't even develop a test kit for several weeks. It is embarrassing. We as a country should be ashamed of this. We should be ashamed of the ideology which argues that it makes sense to nickel and dime the National Institutes of Health, Center for Disease Control, Food and Drug Administration. It's the same attitude we're taking to the Environmental Protection Agency or the Department of Labor. Our workplace safety is obviously a disaster, which is why we have the issues going on in you know, from meatpackers to truckers, to grocery stockers. Do not need to be this kind of country. This is an entire rebuke of a system that says government is unnecessary. Leave it all to the private enterprise. There's no private enterprise way to get out of a pandemic.
No, you're absolutely right. But, you know, and to be fair, this isn't only Trump's fault. This isn't only Trump's doing. This is 40 years of Reaganomics. This is 40 years of starve the beast and drag it in the bathtub and drown it in the bathtub. This is 40 years of government's the problem and needs to be crushed. This is, you know, years of during the Obama term of screwquester and starving the government of resources. And while the funding didn't get cut to these organizations, the Trump administration most certainly wanted to cut funding to these organizations every year of their budgets. So for them to now say that, well, you know, they were fully funded is kind of disingenuous.
For sure. I mean, and a lot of this actually, unfortunately, goes back to the Clinton-Gore years. Al Gore led on the Reinventing Government initiative, which sounded good. Like, hey, let's try to figure out ways to make government work better. And there are always any large institution, every large corporation, every large nonprofit, the Catholic Church. If you're large, you're going to have errors and mistakes happen. It's inherent to any large institution. But the federal government was not worse than other large institutions. But what the Reinventing Government Initiative in, under Clinton and Gore basically meant, hey, if we have a bunch of people making middle-class incomes for the federal government, why don't we outsource those jobs to businesses that'll spring up in Northern Virginia, where we can have executives who make three times as much money as anyone in the government managing government contracts, which cost two times as much money, but we'll reduce the number of people who work for the federal government because they're private contractors. So we'll consult out for business. And that's why Northern Virginia went from like a nicely, slightly upper middle class, but not like especially ritzy area, to the richest part of America. It's because of efforts under Clinton and Gore to consult out both the military industrial complex as well as just the rest of the federal government. It's just all done on consulting contracts right now. They make too much money and don't do as good a job as dedicated public employees.
No, and to highlight that, you know, when Scott Walker went after the public sector workers in Wisconsin, I met a guy who had worked for the state of Wisconsin, and he was saying, look, you know, Walker's cutting all this stuff. I'm retiring from my state job, and I'm going to go work for this contractor that's doing my job, and I'm going to make twice as much money while collecting my pension. And I asked him, I go, you know, don't you have a problem with that? He goes, yeah, it's horribly stupid, but I'm making good money doing it.
Yeah, and the irony of it is that, or not the irony, but part of the intent of this is that Scott Walker pays, you know, the two times the cost of just doing it in-house with a union government official. He does the contractor, and the contractor gives back over like 5% of the overage as a campaign contribution. And so that's how you build out a political dynasty, is you get money back from the, you create a crony capitalism, means that the people in government create these sort of feeders that are dependent on government largesse. The rich are the largest welfare recipients in America. And that's who campaigns, who fund campaigns on behalf of people who keep the system as broken as it is right now.
Which is why they get, you know, all the tax breaks, and why during these moments they're the first bailed out. So last question I've got for you, because look, I think we both want to see the same thing, an energized political system that really gives a rat's behind about working people and working families. What's the way forward in this? I mean, you know, I was a big Bernie Sanders supporter. I thought Sanders would be the right guy. I'm happy to see Biden is moving away from the center and moving a little bit further left. Is that going to take more pressure from voters? What do you see going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to need to, Biden needs to see that the energy in the Democratic Party is on the left. I believe that is the case. I think he's just going to have to continue to see that. I think he's going to need to be clear-eyed about the popularity of a lot of views on the left. I think that right now, the thing that is most striking in all politics right now is that Pelosi is trimming her sails on popular issues, while at the same time, Trump and McConnell are insisting on the priority of liability bailouts for employers who do not take proper precautions for American workers. There's like no way to pull that in which that's anything other than a popular opinion. And if you're Nancy Pelosi, why are you acknowledging you may sell out on employer liability, but that is not a red line for you? It is incredible that Mitch McConnell will sit in the way of relief to the American people who so desperately need it, because he wants to make sure, not that all employers, like it's not that all employers who have employees who get sick are going to get sued. It's only if you fail to take proper precautions. Mitch McConnell is willing to risk the recovery of the United States of America to make sure there cannot be a lawsuit against an employer who gets their workers sick because they're cheap. That is having the courage of his convictions. His convictions are insane, but they are real. And I want Joe Biden to just spend some time thinking about whether or not running forthrightly against Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump and just saying what he believes and believing what he says and moving forward, how is that not obviously better politics than trying to trim your sails?
I'm right there with you. And it's a winning position. I mean, I often wonder how Republicans get away with their scorched earth ideology, but sadly they somehow do. And it's probably because Democrats don't don't push him on it. And we'll see how this plays out. But if I were Pelosi, I'd be hammering the hell out of that. We're going to give him a handful of employers who don't care about their employees immunity. No, that's the red line. But Jeff, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Great stuff. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Stay safe.
Thanks so much, Jeff Hauser. He is the executive director of the Revolving Door Project. You want to check out their website, the revolvingdoorproject.org. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.